Session number 7304, relayed.
Colonel King, reel 8.
How long were you in position near
Kerr? I suppose as a company commander, I was there about 3 or 4 weeks. But then I became adjutant of the battalion, and somebody else took over my company, and I went back to battalion headquarters. Now, it wasn't very long after that that Kerin fell, and the brigade were told that the next objective was Massar and Fast. The reason was they didn't want Massar to be wrecked. They wanted the Italians to blow up all the installations and sink the ships and this, that, and the other, because it was a major port, Massar, from the Italian point of view. And so we and the 4th 16th Punjabs, another battalion of the brigade, were virtually dashed off down the road from Kerin to Massar in order to enter Massar and, fight for Massar if necessary, and to prevent things being blown up. In the meanwhile, Admiral, what's his name, Bonetti? Bonetti, I think it was, under the white flag to go along and try and get him to agree to, but he had been told to fight to the last man by Mussolini, and so there was no joy on that, so off we went. Well, now, a series of things went wrong. Because of the speed of the operation, one met with opposition on the way, on the route to Massar, which we didn't expect, didn't know it was there, told it probably didn't exist. We met with opposition. That was the delay. Having met with that opposition and realized where it was, the next thing was the brigade as such, or rather two battalions, as the 4th 16th Punjabs and ourselves, that were told to attack Massar. And the idea was we should attack it by night. We had only just come up behind because A Company under Major Shinquin of ours had a small battle which had delayed us. We'd only just come up on the day before the night attack was supposed to be. We had largely chosen where our start line should be, A from the map, which later on turned out to be virtually on where the Italian wire was, so or just short of the Italian wire.
Your start line was virtually there out of defence.
Well, it appeared so. However, when we did reconnaissance on the edge of that wire, or just on our side of the wire, so to speak, where the start line was supposed to be, we met with no opposition at that time. So one assumed that the Italians had withdrawn much closer around Massar, and that was that. This was a wrong assumption. When we moved forward that night towards the start line, we were shot at. We met opposition. Now, in the dark, when you think the thing is pretty clear, you're going up in fairly close column to a start line like that.
So you hadn't yet deployed any battle formation?
No, I don't think so. The forward company might have deployed, but the rest of the battalion behind hadn't. That we were shot at. It caused, not panic, but a certain amount of disruption and delay. And that was the important part. Eventually, having overcome, or rather, the opposition having disappeared, I can't remember which, we were delayed. This delay caused us to be late on the start line, and considerably late. The guns had started up, and their sci-fi, and they'd finished before we were on the start line.
So the supporting barrage started and finished.
That's right. Now, there were communication difficulties for two reasons. A, one of the FOOs previously had been killed with the baton. He'd been up with the Ford company, Shinkwin's company, there, and had been killed. And Shinkwin had to actually shoot the guns himself at that time. And so we were a bit short of FOOs. And for some reason, rather, we couldn't, the guns couldn't come on later when we were ready because of communication trouble. I think.
Couldn't get through to them.
I imagine not. I think that was it. But anyway, we could get no artillery support. Well, as I say, we were considerably late crossing the start line. Then there was, unfortunately, a lack of lateral communication to companies right and left. We weren't aware, when we had deployed, that one of the company commanders had gone forward on a reconnaissance, and he was the person who'd had a small battle before with A Company. He'd gone forward to further on, and we were not aware that he had got, in the early hours of the evening, right the way, or in the dark, right the way through the enemy's gun position, then behind. When, in actual fact, the rest of the battalion were trying to deploy on the start line, and they put up flares, he noticed that he was right behind the enemy's guns himself, and unable to get back with his recce party. So that caused a little bit of a concern. So with that going slightly awry, and certainly lateral communication to the company on the right going, things did not go well. We were late crossing the start line. Well, no sooner had we done when, as I say, these flares went up. They went all over the place. I mean, the whole place was like daylight. A lot of fire. A tremendous amount of fire from their guns. And it so transpired, because of lack of time for reconnaissance on, the battalion headquarters were bang out in the open. They couldn't have been more open, and so was one company. Absolutely bang out in the open on a bit of ground that was could have been an airfield. So flat.
What about vegetation?
Apparently none, no. It seemed to be it almost was like a baked mud flat. The only cover there was that on this bit of ground there was some 6-inch rather, well, one can't call them trenches, there were 6-inch depressions of dug there, 6-inch holes, which were about, winding up to about 20 foot in length, and 6 foot, or 8, 7 foot, or 8 foot in breadth, but 6 inches deep. That's all. Fortunately, they were, because that gave us some cover when we had to go to ground. Well, one was so late in all this business there that dawn was then approaching. First light was coming. Having done the approach march, we had got, and we were very close to the enemy's guns. I mean, from town here, of course, you could see them. The company on the right was ordered to into the attack. The company on the left tried to, but couldn't get in. The reserve company, which fortunately was a company without a company commander at the time, that was all right, he was left where he was. But the company on the right went forward. There was more cover on the right, more cover. They were astride the road, they went in there, there was much more cover. And they, you could see them going, and now they suffered casualties, quite a lot of casualties. And didn't get there, what they wanted to do with their particular objective, but very nearly. It was a very good effort. Company on the left didn't make any progress at all.
Well, they just stopped by the volume of fire.
That's right. I mean, it was just so open. I mean, they couldn't. There was no future. But town headquarters was stuck in the middle. And that's the situation. The next thing that happened was along trundles a troop of enemy tanks. Now, they were very light, small Italian tanks like that, which came straight towards battalion headquarters, and they went straight towards the company on the right as well. but the ones we came towards town headquarters, because there was virtually nothing in front of us, we had a boys' anti-tank rifle, and I remember the signal sergeant, who was in the trench with me at the time there, was told, I can't remember, by me or to have a go at it. I said, it probably won't have any effect, but he did have a go at it. And there we down, that tank turned around and went away. And to our surprise, when the other ones were fired on, with what I'm not sure, they turned around and went away. So a troop of five tanks in that troop, they all pushed on.
Did they do any damage to you before they left?
No. At least not to us in the town headquarters area.
What about the company?
Well, this I think they did. I think they did cause some casualties there before they went. They had casualties on the right, and all the people who got wounded and got killed were, as far as I remember, on the right-hand company.
Were these tanks using their main armament, or were they just using a machine gun?
Machine gun. The main arm was a very, I don't know what it was, a very, very small gun. They were very small tanks.
Probably 20 millimetre.
Probably.
How close did they get to before they turned?
Oh, heavens. I suppose the thing must have been 200 yards, if not less. But anyway, it was, as I say, boys' anti-tank rifle shot, which didn't penetrate, but obviously the chap inside didn't like it, or he thought it was something bigger.
You say you could see the guns. How far away were you from the...
About 800 yards, I suppose.
Sorry?
About 800 or 1,000 yards, I suppose. But it was flat, you see. You couldn't see them terribly clearly, but you could see the guns.
What sort of fire was coming down on you? Was it
shells? Yes, shells. The shells. They were obviously not designed. They weren't field artillery pieces. And firing on, well, I would have said, all over open sites, practically. Large number of shells not exploding, thank goodness. They were hitting the ground and ricocheting. It was not very pleasant because the noise was unbelievable. Ones that did go off made a hell of one. They were hellishly big shells. You know, big caliber stuff. And the ones that didn't go off were hitting the ground, of course, making a noise like a London bus going through a tunnel. And it was quite nasty. But, by the grace of God, I say, a good, but very large proportion of the shells did not go off. And we went around, you know, afterwards when we managed to get and sort of saw them. And they were quite big shells.
What about lighter weapons? So were you also under attack from
them? Not a lot. They obviously had a couple of, quite a few heavy machine guns. But we weren't really in range. We went, the town headquarters went in range. The company on the right had got into a certain amount, and the company on the left, they had received a certain amount of small arms. And the one of them, right particularly, they suffered quite a few casualties from it. But not in the middle, because really there's an extraordinary position. That there was a battalion headquarters out in the open with very little, in fact, virtually nothing in front of it in the way of protection or fighting troops.
So your attack had been stopped. You had been subjected to a rather half-hearted counterattack with armour. You were pinned down by fire in the daylight. What happened next?
We didn't know what was happening, really. And the CO sent off Phelps, who was a sort of headquarters company commander at the time there, over down to brigade headquarters, which we knew where it was. It was behind the 4th 16th Punjab on our left, to find out what the hell was happening. And he did. He found out there that that they had made some progress, the 416th Punjab, and also the brigade coming in from Kerin to on the Masar Kerin Road from which you might call Kerin Masar Road was had penetrated into the outskirts of Masar, and you know the battle was over.
But you were still being shot at.
Well, by this time, by the time Phelps came back and it broad daylight, and they were still having an old pot of dust. But, I mean, everything had died down. We weren't trying to attack them, and they weren't trying to attack us. It was what you might call a deadlock, or it appeared to be. In actual fact, the real reason was, the fact was that they had been told to pack it in. But they hadn't come towards us with a white flag flying or anything like that. The first thing we knew, our own people, was when Shinquin came back through the gun lines back to us saying, look, these chaps are packed up. Mm-hmm. They've all been told to withdraw. The next thing we saw was them back in Masar. And we went through their sort of line of positions, which is, as I say, naval guns concreted in.
Their infantry positions, did they have?
They didn't. They were very much close on top of the guns. Very much close on top of the guns. I think, in actual fact, they were pretty short of infantry. And they had scraped anything off a naval ship, guns off naval ships, and put them in the concrete. They had taken sailors and people like that who were for close protection of the gunners. As far as I remember, there wasn't a heck of a lot of infantry positions there.
How far ahead of their gun line was their wire perimeter then, and how deep was that?
Ooh. Well, the first lot was quite a long way ahead. I suppose the first lot of wire we came across, when we were thinking in terms of start line, must have been, I suppose, a good 1,200 yards more away.
And they had no positions immediately covering them?
No, well, they had. But I don't think they were positions that they were, what you might call, permanent positions. They were outpost positions there. I don't think it was a main position at all there. And that was probably on the road down, and on the track down. Because once one had bumped those and overcome them, that was there. Because really, after that, far as I recall, when we passed through that, there was the next lot of wire in front of the guns, which is only about 200 yards in front, as I remember.
You say you bumped these outposts. What sort of size were the outposts positioned?
Couldn't tell you. It was night. Couldn't tell you. I mean, there was firing. We'd had problems. A company previously had some problems there. And we moving up. They'd pushed off, and when we went through, everything was supposed to be clear. But then then the companies came forward, get on the start line, trouble start. I think they'd move people up. Whether it was that or they'd sent out a patrol, and we bumped the patrol or not, it's very difficult to tell to this day because it's pitch black.
You mentioned your own barrage. What sort of guns did you have?
25 pounders.
How far behind you were they?
No, offhand, I couldn't tell you. I suppose they'd be, put it this way, they were in range, 3,000 yards. I don't honestly know. I'm just guessing.
Had their shells done any damage to the enemy positions?
None that we could see.
How long was the little barrage that they fired in support of your...
Minutes? I don't know. I think it was probably about. Maybe
just
longer.
Intended to mask or
that's
not,
right.
It wasn't
Support. They didn't have the ammunition at the time to do that.
You mentioned that your right hand company had fairly severe casualties during its attempt to get. What sort of proportion of the company were knocked out by the...
What proportion? Dead. I suppose about 15%. I suppose. See, we were terribly under strength. Maybe even slightly more than that. We were terribly under strength by this time. We've been all the way through Eritrea, no reinforcements, nothing. Terribly under strength. I mean, the company at that time was about 80 strong. No, I would say the company at that time was about 70 strong.
You say you've
we had about what 15, 17 casualties.
What had caused the casualties then to bring you so much under strength? Was it enemy action or was it disease mainly?
Well, we'd gone through Mel's Taklai, we'd had Cub, we'd had the odd, all the way down you had the odd casualties, which I haven't mentioned. I mean, the odd chaps these chaps who stepped on the mines and things like that. You had the odd chap who was out on patrol or something who got wounded, or we had the around Cub, no casualties as such, but there were casualties insofar they were what you might call chaps who'd got hit in the leg or just gently and you thought it was all right and then went back for treatment. And we had certain amount, quite a bit of, you know, sickness coming there. And generally, I mean, one hadn't seen any reinforcements in the battalion.
Well, what were the main forms of sickness that caused casualties?
Well, you've got a type of sore out there which you can call a desert sore, or you can call it what you like, which were caused by scratches from all sorts of things, or from grazes, which went bad. And although they went once and needed evacuation, in the end they did, because if it happened to your feet or anything else like that, you were unable to march, you were unable to walk. And a lot of people did get it around their ankles and things like that. You got, that was that, you got an awful lot of tummy trouble.
Dysentery also?
Well, it wasn't dysentery as such. It was what one would term jippy tummy. And one still got it in the Sudan, although one wasn't in Egypt. I mean, you know, or in Eritrea you got it. It was mainly due to all sorts of factors that I don't understand. It could be water, it could be food, it could be something the soldier's eaten in a way that he's picked up. There was one or two cases of jaundice, and those are the sort of things. But gradually, you see, you lose them. You lose three men a day in 6 months. That's a lot of men. A lot of men with no reinforcements coming for. I don't say we did lose that amount a day, but we went very strong. We went to Sudan and on to Eritrea, because after all, we'd had no reinforcements since Terence of Suez, I think, far as I remember. And gradually we ran down, with no replacements coming in, and inevitably the battalion goes down from 600, whatever strength it was, like that, right down to something in the region of 4, over a period of time.
What did you do when you were called forward from your...
Well, then we entered Massar, and we were responsible for a certain section of Massar, and the first thing that happened was we were told to take over some barracks there, which in actual fact were naval barracks. And we found the place was absolutely full of Navy there, who were completely disinterested in us.
Italian Navy.
They are completely disinterested in us. And we said, come on, form up and fall in out there and... get all your kit that you want, and you're going into a cage somewhere, and fall in on your outside in such much time. They said, no, we're going to have breakfast first. And so we said, you're not. He said, yes, we are. It's on the cook now. It's very cooked now. We're just going to eat it. So the question of whether you imposed your will and said, no breakfast, or we'll eat it for you, sort of business, or what? And we thought, oh, no, let them have their breakfast. And we were told our orders were to round up all Italian forces, army maybe like. That, of course, was one of the things which was a slight mistake, because in Massar they had some of the largest coal storage. They had a very, very largest coal storage points, and obviously it's the base in which they supplied meat and everything, things like that, to hold the Italian garrison in Eritrea. And they put into the bag the chaps who ran the coal store. And of course, as the chap went, packed up his kit and himself, like any Swiss store, fit the whole thing off.
So all the meat went rotten?
No, fortunately not. Because we had seen this coal store, and we put, and our quartermaster rubbed his hands together and said, "My God, look at that meat sort of business like that." As soon as the Italians moved out like that, he was in there like a flash, and he also, remember, a flash like that, realized the temperature, what it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. So he put a sentry on the door and shut the bloody door quick and said, "Now, you have to find out a chap who can operate." So the first thing we did was send get the coal storage man back at all costs. And so back they came. The same thing that happened also in the hospital. They had a most beautiful hospital, Messiah, an air-conditioned hospital. Italian, sir. And we let the, as they had wounded, and they had sick, and goodness knows in the hospital, one wasn't going to boot them out. And so you wouldn't boot the doctors out, so the doctors allowed to remain here. Yeah. But what they bloody well did, yes, and in the hospitals, I said, they booted the technical people out. Well, the position was there, but it didn't take a while to manage to get them back. But he caused a certain amount of chaos in the air conditioning. The operating theatre hospital. Again, air conditioning and power. So not only do you have screaming Italian doctors, but the Italian doctors cursing out there, so they had no light or anything before. But you had the British staff by this time, the field ambulance, the Indian field ambulance. And they went to a few hours. We had a lot of people wounded. I mean, Indians, my own soldiers, and so on. And it had them. They've all been patched up. They're a fine hospital. Yes, they did. Mm-hmm. Amazing things happened. I think you can probably quote many cases during the last war. There were two lots got together, and found they worked perfectly happy together. None. In fact, one of our soldiers I went to see, who subsequently died in the hospital,